Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Is it me or does everyone sound a little weak this morning? Let me just say that a little stronger. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. This morning I'm reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 80. Sudama visits Lord Krishna. So it's text 42 to the end of the chapter. We'll just chant 42 together. So the word meanings, Tushta, satisfied, aham, I am, bo, my dear ones, Dvija, Brahmanas, Shrestha, O best, Satya, fulfilled, Santu, may they be, Manarata, your desires, Chandamsi, Vedic mantras, Ayata Yamani, never growing old, Avantu, may they be, Iha, in this world, Paratra, in the next world, cha and. Tusto hambo dvija sreshta. Satya shantu manorata. Chandam shayata yamani. Avantra ham paratra cha. Susto hambo dujastresta. Satya shanti manorata. Chandamsya yata yamani. Avantiha paratracha. Tushto hambo dvija sreshta. Kanta shantu manorata. Chandam shakshakra yatmani. Bhavanta bhavanta viha paratracha.
Satsang with Mooji.
Anyone else? Translation. You boys are first-class brahmanas, and I am satisfied with you. May all your desires be fulfilled, and may the Vedic mantras you have learned never lose their meaning for you in this world or the next. Purport. Cooked food left sitting for 3 hours is called yatayama, indicating that it has lost its taste. And similarly, if a devotee does not remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, the transcendental knowledge that once inspired him on the spiritual path will lose its taste or meaning for him. Thus, Sandipani Muni blessed his disciples that the Vedic mantras, which reveal the absolute truth, will never lose their meaning for them, but will remain ever fresh in their minds. Text 43, Lord Krishna continued, we had many similar experiences while living in our spiritual master's home. Simply by the grace of the spiritual master, a person can fulfill life's purpose and attain eternal peace. The Brahmana said, what could I possibly have failed to achieve, O Lord of Lords, O Universal Teacher, since I was able to personally live with you, whose every desire is fulfilled at the home of our spiritual master? Purport, Sudama Brahmana wisely understands his extraordinary good fortune of having lived with Sri Krishna at the residence of their spiritual master. Thus, whatever external difficulties they experienced were actually an expression of the Lord's mercy to teach the importance of service to the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada rendered the learned Brahman's feeling as follows. Sudama said, my dear king, you are the supreme lord and the supreme spiritual master of everyone. And since I was fortunate enough to live with you in the house of our guru, I think I have nothing more to do in the matter of prescribed Vedic duties. Text 45. O Almighty Lord, your body comprises the absolute truth in the form of the Vedas and is thus the source of all auspicious goals of life. That you took up residence at the school of a spiritual master is simply one of your pastimes in which you play the role of a human being. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 80th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Brahmana Sudama Visits Lord Krishna in Dwaraka. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshunimani Tamyana Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. These verses are significant in a number of ways. We'll focus on sound and love in today's class. But as I say, the verses represent the perfection of a devotee's life in many ways. Particularly, here we see God brothers. You can also understand God brothers, God sisters, working and serving together in the ashram of the spiritual master, and achieving all success in life in that way. So, very wonderful lesson that we have every day in our lives to try to come to this ideal of sacrificing in a joint way for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada, so that we may receive the blessings just as Sandipani Muni gave the blessings to Krishna and Sudama. in the verses we read today. So, as I mentioned, we're going to focus on two of the most powerful influences in the universe, sound and love. Sound and love, the power of sound and love are combined in the science of mantra. So we'll talk about mantra today. But there we'll find the power of these two things, sound and love combined. Sound. In the Vedic conception of creation, sound plays a very big part. It's kind of strange when you think about it. We think of sound to be sort of ethereal, you know, it's not hard and concrete. But actually, according to the Vedas, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, sound creates this material world. Sound creates this material world. I want to read to you a little bit from a purport that Srila Prabhupada writes to a verse in the third canto about creation. It has a very interesting twist to it. So Prabhupada writes, so this creation, the beginning of the creation is the sound. The modern physicists, they also agree, sound and light, according to their theory. But the sound is the origin of creation, mixed with these modes of ignorance. Everything here in the material world is spiritual reflection covered by material elements. So when this sound is purified, you can catch up the spiritual sound. Then your spiritual life begins. As from the material sound, this material creation has begun from the first of all, the sky, nabha, or ether, and from ether, air is created, wind, and from air, then fire is created, electricity, you see. From the sound, there is immediate electricity in the sky, the fire. Electricity means fire, so from sky, the sound is created. Prabhupada's describing that not only this material world is created by sound, but if we get the right sound and if we utilize it correctly, then our spiritual life can also be revived. We're covered in this material world. Our bodies are covered. When I say our body, I'm speaking as spirit soul. Our bodies are covered by so many gross material elements, and we're inside a universe that's covered with vast spaces of material elements. Yet all of that can be dispelled just by sound. Sound is so powerful. And the sound that does that is the mantra. Mantra. Who can give a definition of mantra? Yes, Aridhika. Ma means mind and tra means deliver. So we chant a mantra for deliverance from this material world. Mantra meditation. I had a question about mantra and meditation, actually, and maybe I'll just put it out there to all of you to get some feedback. In our preaching, often we interact with people and we talk about mantra and mantra meditation. But we often start with descriptions of how the mind is very cluttered or unsteady or constantly running, and we tell them by focusing on a mantra, you can bring the mind under control. But I wonder, are we doing a disservice when we say that to somebody? That a mantra, particularly maybe the Hare Krishna mantra, can be used to bring the mind under control? Is that the purpose of mantra meditation, Madan Mohan?
It's not that the mind stops its activities, it's that you're not particularly listening to it anymore. So when Prabhupada was asked that question, Prabhupada, I can't control my not mind when I'm chanting Hare Krishna, he responded back, chanting Hare Krishna is controlling your mind.
Okay. Hare Krishna is controlling your mind. I'll come back to you.
Well, I find that oftentimes people I speak with, they're not ready to hear more than that. They can't comprehend any deeper explanation mantra than that. So sufficient for many people in the introductory stages.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. John Lawson?
I don't think people would, I think that might intimidate people. They say this, you can control your mind. It sounds a little bit like a cult. You know, bring your mind under control, but it seems like people are more interested in that it can bring you real inner peace and an understanding of gradually as you chant the mantra, the purpose of life will be revealed. You can develop your relationship with God. Seems mm-hmm. like that's something that people would be more inclined to buy into than control the mind, you know, the brainwashing cult. And that's what it conjures up to me, you know, and I would think that people might be a little intimidated by that.
Mm. Anybody on the ladies' side? Yes, Mother Agamitha. I'd like to hear from all of you preachers out there what you're saying to everybody.
When you show somebody the picture of the horses and the chariot mm-hmm. and the different levels of, you know, the soul is the passenger, the driver is the intelligence, the reins are the mind. When you show this and then the senses are out of control, you can easily point out that it behooves them to get a handle on their mind. So it's not out of place to say, in that respect, with the whole picture in mind, that get a hold of your mind. We want to get a hold of our mind. It's favorable.
Mm-hmm. Also, to deliver the mind, I think that's different than just saying control the mind.
Mm.
In other words, our mind is always going. But if we can deliver it from the material bodily conception, then we're actually experiencing real happiness. And because to control the mind means that almost like we're regimented, but yet we're understanding at the highest form of bhakti yoga, spontaneous. So it's not just that in the pure state, our mind is so controlled that we're scheduled to serve Krishna in certain ways, but we're being enlivened from within to be spontaneously serve Krishna when the mind is delivered.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily just ironclad control.
That's Srila Dita, right? I can't see you through the... Okay. Yes, Madam Mati? Or somebody else there? Yeah. Madam Mati?
Controlling the mind is, I quote them, Chaitra Darpana Marjanam, and I tell them it cleanses your mind, and then I'll say your heart. So that's one of the things. And I tell them that there are seven things, but normally I just tell them the first one.
Yeah, well, I think these are all good, and I thank you for the contribution, because my concern or doubt or query here is that that if we tell people that they can control the mind or stop the mind from running wild and things like that, it's almost like a something material as opposed to giving them the name of Krishna, which is that mantra which delivers or us, as Adidev was saying. So thank you for that. Because it's part of the science of mantra, and people are aware of mantra these days. It's not that it's a foreign thing, but there may be a lot of misuse of mantra and that sound vibration. So I think if they come to a devotee of Krishna, we have to be sure that we're giving them the best or giving them the right thing. But there's considerations like Ramin said, well, maybe they're not ready. We have to take that into consideration, settle their mind first, and then give them Hare Krishna. But I'm just concerned we might drift from what our understanding of mantra meditation actually means. Because the mantras are so powerful that we really need to be careful about how we approach them and how we use them. And if we're not, a lot of difficulties can result from that. And there are many sort of stories or histories in the Vedic literature in this regard. I think the one that comes to my mind first is about Kunti. Kunti was a young girl living in the palace of her father, and Durvasa Muni came to visit. You all know the story. Durvasa Muni came to visit, and she served him, although he's pretty hard to satisfy, and he's got a few mantras that we want him to keep, not express. So she satisfied him, and he gave her a mantra. But she was a young girl, and she didn't really understand the power of the mantra. And so she sort of playfully thought, let me test it out. And what happened when she tested it out? Yeah, the mantra was for calling a demigod to give her a child. And, you know, she was surprised when she chanted the mantra and it worked. And all of a sudden, here was the sun god, you know, ready to give her a child. So that caused a problem. They worked it out on one level, but for the rest of her life, Karna as her son and that relationship was very troubling. It was a very troubling situation. And we can trace it back to sort of misuse of or not complete understanding of a mantra and utilizing it. And so mantras are very powerful, and they need to be utilized with full knowledge, of what the mantra is and what it can do. Actually, on Krishna.com, I think that I don't know who writes these things for Krishna.com, but they talk about the meaning of a mantra, and it's interesting what they say, because I think it's quite good. Let me just read it here. It says, the mind is always busy. It can't be stopped. Meditation and yoga are for helping us rise above the mind's chatter. When we meditate, what we meditate on now creates our future life. I thought that was very interesting. What we meditate on now creates our future life. Again, it's sound creating. And so we should know what we're meditating on because it's going to create our future. And we should know the mantra that we're chanting, because if we're not completely versed in that mantra, then results may happen which which surprise us. Now, of course, there's a couple things about mantras that are important in terms of knowing them and questioning about them and utilizing them. One thing is an injunction that's in the Padma Purana that any mantra needs to be received in an authorized manner. Sampradaya vihinaye mantras te nisphala matha. If one does not follow the four recognized disciplic successions of Parampara, his mantra is useless. We may receive a mantra in an unauthorized way, but no matter how powerful that mantra is, it's useless for its original purpose unless we receive it in an authorized way. And there's a very clear example in the history of the Hare Krishna movement in this regard. You may know that Srila Prabhupada wasn't the first person to chant Hare Krishna here in America. We've been making a recording of that. Do you know this? Who was the first? Allen Ginsberg was the first. He had gone to India. Allen degraded Ginsberg. Had gone to India and he had picked up the Hare Krishna mantra and he made a recording of it when he came back in America. But how come the Hare Krishna movement didn't start? Oh, you're going to tell us. Okay, Paramahamsa Yogananda was chanting Hare Krishna. So what? How come the Hare Krishna movement didn't explode, as Hare Griva tells us, when they chanted Hare Krishna? How come the Hare Krishna didn't move and explode? No potency. The potency of the mantra wasn't there. And I guess we'd have to assume that this verse in the Padma Purana is explaining why. Sampradaya vihinaye mantras te nisphalamata. If it's not received in an authorized way, then you'll not get the results. It won't fructify. Prabhupada came in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And he gave the Hare Krishna mantra in disciplic succession, and therefore there was and there is the Hare Krishna explosion all over the world. So how we receive the mantra is very important. Knowing what it is so that we don't naively utilize it and create problems. There's another verse that describes how simply problems come. What is that verse? Anyway, there's a verse that describes that it simply creates a disturbance in society. Shruti shruti pranadi panchadachana begin vina. Yeah, so what is the translation you can give? Anybody?
Engaging devotional service but not following the authorized scriptures called Sruti and other shastras. Their presentation is based on their mental speculation and their own concoction, and it creates a disturbance.
It's a disturbance in society, yes. So, importance of receiving mantra correctly. Now, all of this relates nicely to the verse 42 that we read today, which talks about the role of the spiritual master in giving a mantra. I'll just go over the purport again because it's short, but it explains the point. Cooked food left sitting for 3 hours is called yata-yama, indicating that it has lost its taste. And similarly, if a devotee does not remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, the transcendental knowledge that once inspired him on the spiritual path will lose its taste or meaning for him. Thus, Sandipani Muni blesses his disciples that the Vedic mantras, which reveal the absolute truth, will never lose their meaning for them, but will remain ever fresh in their minds. So this gets back to the aspect of love being powerful, the powerful force. Mantra is a powerful force, but when it's combined with love, then it becomes extremely powerful, extremely potent. And so that love is shown by Krishna and Sudama here by serving faithfully Sandipani Muni, and he reciprocates in love with them by blessing them that the mantra will not become yata yama or lose its taste. It will always remain fresh to them. We're dependent upon the spiritual master in this way, not only to receive it in an authorized way, but to receive his blessings in reciprocation for our service, that mantra remains potent. It remains enlivening for us. We've all experienced the enlivenment of receiving Hare Krishna mantra and service to the Guru, but sometimes we lose a taste. Actually, this is the greatest fear. We're talking about the greatest, you know, forces in the universe, love and mantra sound. But the greatest fear would be to lose the taste that we once had and go away from devotional service. How does that happen? I mean, such a powerful thing as the Hare Krishna mantra we get, and we have a taste for it, and we're chanting blissfully, but then we see that many people, many devotees, they go away. They seem to lose the taste. How does that happen? Is that Mohan?
Lord Chaitanya, when he was talking to Rupa Goswami, he made it into an analogy that he says, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, it's watering your creeper of devotional service. But he says the water also waters the weeds in your garden. So you have to distinguish between the weeds and the creeper to pull out the weeds. But if you don't pull out the weeds, then they actually turn into offenses. And then when the offenses, they can check everything.
Yeah, offenses against the holy name. Therefore, we practice avoiding the 10 offenses to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna mantra is potent. It's given in disciplic succession. Therefore, the potency is there. But if we chant with offenses, then the potency is dampened. The potency is dampened. And if they turn into offenses, as Madan says, then the creeper of bhakti can be completely uprooted. So we have to be very, very careful to chant without offense. Then this kind of benediction that Sandipani Muni is giving, the same type of benediction was given to Gopal Kumar, by the way, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. When he received his mantra from his guru, he blessed him that it'll always remain fresh in his mind. And so therefore he chanted that mantra, and he went all over the universe on the strength of that sound vibration, chanting his mantra, because it always remained fresh to him, no matter what situation he's in. But if we create offenses, then we'll lose that taste. And there's an example of this also from the Mahabharata of Karna. Karna again, he was in trouble before at his birth, now he's trouble again. He wanted to become a warrior. He wanted to become, so he went and he approached Parasaram for taking lessons. But Parasaram was deadly against the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas. And so he wouldn't teach any Kshatriya. So, now sometimes you hear it that Karna told him he was a Brahmana, or even if he didn't tell him he was a Brahmana, I heard other people say, well, he didn't tell him he was a Brahmana, but he knew he wasn't, he knew he wasn't a Brahmana, and he didn't reveal that. One way or another, by deceit, Karna got instruction from Parasaram. And, of course, it came out, And Parasuram cursed him. What was his curse? What was Parasuram's curse?
When the important time comes for his valor to, his strength to show in the battlefield, this knowledge will never be fruitful to him.
Yes, the point is, we're reading here how Sandeep Manipuni blessed that it will always remain fresh. But if offense is there, you'll be just like, when you need it most, what was that verse? I can't remember. This is also, you know, result of offense, that the mantra loses its taste. So more important than the mantra must be, we must receive the blessings of the spiritual master in order to take full advantage of the mantra, and that it never lose its taste and meaning to us. I think that even without being so qualified, Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya offer that to us, that even if we may do so many things that don't endear us to our spiritual master, their mercy, his mercy, is greater than our neglect of the order. And so that taste comes back. We've seen so many devotees, they go away. But at the end of life, when it becomes most important, it didn't come for karna at that time, but somehow or another, by the mercy of Prabhupada, it's coming even for the devotees who seem to have forgotten, but they get that taste again and they come to Krishna at the end. So the mercy of the spiritual master is very necessary. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even makes it more of a merciful opportunity for us, because it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that even if the pronunciation is not correct, you know, Vedic mantras, there are so many rules and regulations, time, place, pronunciation, these things are so important. And if you don't get it right, there's all kinds of wild things that can happen. You know the story about Vritrasura. I actually have the words that were spoken by Tvasta here. He spoke them wrong. And whether he spoke them wrong intentionally or not, he spoke them wrong. Tvasta was engaged by Indra to help him deal with the problem that he had created by offending his spiritual master. And so at some point he needed Tvasta to create the enemy of Indra. And so that would be Indra Shatru, which means the enemy of Indra. But Tvasta mistakenly said Indra Shatru, making the A long, so the meaning was changed to enemy, who Indra, who is an enemy. And essentially means that Vritrasura came and was fighting Indra rather than Indra getting help some other way. It's so important how you chant the mantras in Vedic ceremonies and everything. Have priests specifically for checking how the pronunciation, the meter goes. And there are sections of the Vedas that tell about these meters and everything. It's a very detailed science. So that's mantra chanting according to the Vedas. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came and said there's no hard and fast rules for chanting. And there's an example is given about the Muslim who was dying by being gored by a boar. Huh? Ha Rama. He was chanting like that, which means this is terrible. This is like horrible. But because there's two syllables there, even though they're separated in the words, still the Hare Krishna mantra is so potent that it can deliver one. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, that time, place, circumstance, pronunciation, none of these things can dampen the effect. As long as the other things are in place, we're putting several things in place and we want to get them all in order, so that the most the effect can be there. But Lord Chaitanya's mercy doesn't end there in terms of mantra. By giving a Hare Krishna mantra, he's giving what has never been given before, which is pure love of Radha and Krishna, which is such a special gift, even in terms of any kind of Vedic benedictions or liberation that one can achieve. To be given the opportunity to have a glimpse into the pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, to participate in those pastimes, is a very, very special benediction that that all of us have been given. So, and not that we've been given it, but the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his purpose is to distribute it as widely as possible. He describes in Chaitanya Charitamrita that he broke open the storehouse of love of God, and he had a problem when he broke open the storehouse. What was his problem? When Lord Chaitanya broke open the storehouse of love of God and to distribute it to all living beings, he had a problem. Yes.
Wish more people to help him.
Right. He wanted all of us to help him because here's this valuable thing, the mantra, Hare Krishna mantra. And his problem was that how much can I do? How much can I give out? Therefore, I need everyone to help me distribute this as widely as possible. Just imagine the most intimate, the highest, most complete understanding of the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, Krishna prema, love for Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, is being distributed widely and freely without any hard and fast rules. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. And when you think about what we described about the power of sound vibration, the power of love, Lord Chaitanya's love for the living entities overpowered any consideration of rules and regulations, because he has love for all living entities, causeless love. So therefore there are no rules and regulations which are superior to that love. When you add up the power of sound, the mantra, the power of Lord Chaitanya's love, it's such a wonderful opportunity that we have. So we shouldn't miss it by somehow or another losing this taste. Hopefully that the taste by Krishna's mercy, by Prabhupada's mercy, that will always remain at least fresh enough in our minds and our hearts that we go on with the practice, even though it may be difficult and trying for us at various times and places. Yes, Madame Mohan.
When he asked this as a question, I'm trying to figure out. There was a tape where Prabhupada was talking about Galagraha and Vigraha.
Mm.
So the deity and the holy name are, they have something in common, that they're both Krishnas. So I think it's the Harinam Chintamani, it says that if someone makes offenses, then the holy name doesn't reveal all its potency to the person.
Mm-hmm.
So it mentions, you know, to preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless, but we've been around for a while, so perhaps we could mention that the holy name is Krishna. So it's not, sometimes we say mantra, we're kind of like putting it into a separate category,
mm-hmm.
but it's Krishna himself. So you're actually, there's a thing with cell phones where there's a pocket call, I think they call it. Your phone dials somebody without you really intending to talk to the person. So the other person answers the phone, says, hello, hello, but there's no one there because it's an inattentive call. So in a similar way, we say Hare Krishna, and Krishna says yes. And you're just paying attention to your mind. It's like you're not even talking to him. You're just in having another conversation. And if you've ever been on one of those pocket calls, you hear the other person talking and you hear them having their other different things, but it's not really for you, you know, inattentively.
What time does that clock say up there? I have a conference call at 9 o'clock. What? 5 before 9? I have to go have a conference call at 9 o'clock. Sorry. I'm going to write you my Bhagavatam.